Before we start today's episode, I want to give a bit of a heads up and a content warning because during our conversation, Ruby and I talked about an illustration that she made in response to a mass shooting here in New Zealand. While we don't go into the specific details of that event, its impact on Ruby's career is mentioned multiple times. I have noted the timestamps in the transcript where this topic starts and ends, so you can feel free to skip that section as you can still enjoy the rest of the episode without listening to that section. Above all, I really want you to just be kind to yourself, so if you need to skip that section, it's fine, and if you need to miss the whole episode, we totally understand. Do what is best for you, there will always be other episodes for you to listen to, and I would love to see you in those. Now, if you are ready, let's start the episode and talk to Ruby. We all dream of that viral moment when our work is seen around the world, millions of people tell us how much they love it, and it takes our career to the next level. But what happens when that's how your creative business journey starts? And where are you supposed to go from there?
I feel like we all are kind of meant to follow this career path, you know, neatly going up a hill till we get to the top. And I felt like I just kind of catapulted like 0 to 100. And then since then, I've had to kind of fill in all the steps in between.
The voice you just heard is Ruby Jones. Ruby is an illustrator based in Wellington, New Zealand. She likes to make art that shines a little bit of light on everyday moments and reminds us what it means to be human. In this episode, you'll learn what happens when your art goes viral and Time Magazine becomes your first client, insights for publishing books as an artist, how to simplify your social media strategy and follow your creative instincts, how important your values are to your creative business, and how to keep creating when the world is overwhelming, plus so much more. So if you're ready, let's start the episode and talk to Ruby. Okay, so welcome to the show, Ruby. The people have heard a little bit in the introduction about what you do right now, but I would love to kind of throw things back a little bit and understand where your journey has started. So my first question is, have you always been a creative? Tell me about where little Ruby was and were you a creative back then?
Yeah, I have always been. It's funny when people ask, like, when did you start drawing? And I honestly cannot remember. It's just my brother and I, from the youngest age, that's all we were obsessed with. And I just remember as a kid sitting around for hours, surrounded by piles of paper, just drawing little people. That's all I ever wanted to draw was people. And nothing's changed, really. I just kept drawing, not thinking that it would ever turn into any kind of career. I just loved it so much. And I was like, this can just be my precious little side thing for me. And if I ever happened to make any money off it, that would be great. But I wasn't like actually pursuing it, you know. And then I kind of feel like, as cheesy as this sounds, I feel like illustration, I don't know, it almost chose itself for me as a career in a way, because obviously it's a dream. But then it kind of came as such a surprise out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a big
laugh. No, that's great. And I love that, like, I feel like so many people find drawing people intimidating because it feels hard, but you were like, no, that's my favorite thing. I love drawing people.
I know. It's so funny. I remember as a kid as well thinking, like, why would I want to draw anything else? Like, I think I love this idea of, like, I don't know, every person just has so much that we don't know about, so much to discover, so many stories. And like, I just remember thinking, like, why would I draw a cat if I already know what that cat looks like? Whereas a person, I could just pull everything from my brain and that person didn't exist before I drew them, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, that's so fun. That's so beautiful. Okay, so you mentioned that sort of illustration chose itself, or it chose you in a way. So tell me about that. How did you get into illustration as a career?
Yeah, so I had just been like sharing my drawings for years online, just to like a few hundred followers, my friends and family. And I also happened to do that one day on the 15th of March 2019. And I had done an illustration in response to the terrorist attacks in Christchurch, honestly not thinking a huge amount about that drawing when I did it. It was just such a like reaction in the moment illustration. And I just shared that again, like to a few hundred people, thinking this is just like the tiniest hand to hold in this moment, like it wasn't meant to be an enormous thing. And then it kind of just took on this life of its own and like somehow just kind of went right around the world, and still feels like surreal saying that today. And like, it was pretty surreal experience.
Yeah. I remember seeing that post, and it, like, everybody was sharing it on their stories. And I'm from Christchurch too. I don't live there anymore, but from there. And so it was very like aware of what was going on and sharing and talking to my family and everything too. And so seeing everybody posting, and I was posting and all of that. And so I saw that post going around everywhere, and it definitely was this like very intense, like viral moment. And I didn't realize that that was the beginning of your, I guess, career as an illustrator. So what did that look like in kicking off your career?
Yeah, well, it was pretty crazy. I think I'd maybe done one paid illustration job before that. So that really was like kind of it. And then honestly, from like that evening of 15th of March, my inbox was just like flooded with offers for as many jobs as you can imagine. And then ironically, my then proper first paid job was the cover of Time magazine, which came like 2 or 3 days after that first drawing, which is like that is so insane. So yeah, that was actually the start for me, which is bizarre. I kind of think of it like, I don't know, I feel like we all are kind of meant to follow this career path, you know, neatly going up a hill till we get to the top. And I felt like I just kind of catapulted like 0 to 100, and then since then I've had to kind of fill in all the steps in between, you know.
Yeah, what a dream, but also kind of a chaotic, like,
totally.
now I have to figure everything out that I wasn't really prepared to have to figure out, I can imagine.
Did you have
any of the like behind the scenes things set up for doing like paid work or for like having a brand? Yeah, you sort of were playing catch up on those things.
Yeah, honestly, I had absolutely nothing. I'd just literally been drawing. I don't think I had a desk. I'd just been drawing on my bed. And then it was suddenly like I did have to figure all that out within a few days, a few weeks. Because, of course, people were emailing saying, I want to buy this. I want to buy this drawing and that print. And I was so overwhelmed. And, yeah, I just kind of, it's funny as well, because there wasn't anyone around me that I could be like, oh,
yeah,
anyone been through this experience? So I kind of did have to just muddle my way through until I worked out what to do.
Yeah totally. So how did you like mentally manage the experience of going quote unquote like viral, especially when it was around something so intense as the terror attacks in Christchurch? Obviously, people go viral all the time and they can sort of like capitalize on that virality, but you're going viral because of something that's quite awful. but yours, you know, the content you created is a beautiful response to that. So you want to make the most of, you know, this opportunity and this career, but then obviously something awful is happening at the same time. How did you mentally balance all of those emotions that I can imagine were going on at the time?
Yeah, honestly, I actually just mentioned this in the talk I did. I think perhaps from the outside, it was easy for people around me just to kind of be excited and see all these dreams coming true. But it took so long for me to not just see the black and white of it, which was that 51 people had died and then all of my dreams were coming true. And how's that fear? How can I place that in my heart to move forward and to not be filled with guilt every day, which I was for like a long time. And it took years to work through for me just because it was massive. And it wasn't easy at all. But I kind of just, like you said, I just had to remind myself of what the illustration stood for and what it did for people and bring everything back to that and just continue to make work that made people feel the same way, made people feel connected and seen and heard. And
it was
a big journey.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, definitely. And so since then, and as you just said, like the work that you do create and you have been creating still talks about like really big topics, but has this continuing themes of like joy and light and togetherness and all of that stuff. And you mentioned in your little blurb, like, I like to shine the light on life and things like that. Why is that so important to you? Why is that such a big, or why are they such big themes in your work?
I don't know. I think I've always been drawn to art that does that, that shines a light on even the tiniest moments that we all go through and maybe don't talk about. And I think, I don't know, I think there's something sort of beautiful in feeling comforted even by the tiniest drawing by someone or something. And I think when I realized, oh, I can make art that can also do that for people or make people feel seen even in the smallest ways, I just remember thinking, why would I want to do anything other than that? I think I love kind of stopping and we run around crazily in life. Everyone's always frantic. We've got a million things to do. And I kind of also like making just like a little pause in that as well, you know?
Yeah.
It reminds us to stop and look after ourselves, look after each other.
Yeah, totally. I know, like at the moment you have on your store this print that's different cups of tea and the different moments that you have different cups of tea in, and that's like I love that print because like cups of tea to me are like just those little moments of joy in your day or like moments of calm or moments of like connection, and that's something to me that like I love that print because it resonates with me as like, you know, I have a lot of things going in my life, but every moment that I can sit down and just have a cup of tea is a moment that I can like just take a break and just calm down and like come back to myself, or I can sit down with a friend and have a cup of tea, or like it's just, yeah, just those little moments that you can remind yourself like everything's okay or like I can just focus. Yeah. If I can just focus on this cup of tea right now, that's okay.
Yeah, I know there is something about a cup of tea as well. Like it feels like it's something incredibly comforting in all those different moments.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I'm from England originally, and I think every British person feels like a cup of tea can solve absolutely everything.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. But I love that like you have those messages, and it feels like you have really like very clear values in yourself and your business and your work. Is that something that you have done intentional work to kind of figure out in your brand, or you just kind of come naturally over time? Or yeah, have you done any sort of brand strategy, quote unquote, work?
Oh my gosh, I actually haven't. I feel a little bit useless in all the kind of business side of it all, to be honest. Like, I think what it comes down to for me is just that I continue to be my most authentic self, and I want that to always come through in my work and me as a person. It was kind of hard initially when I was like totally thrown in the deep end, and I was sort of like, oh, I could go in literally any direction right now. And I think I did just kind of have to make that decision of like pulling it right back to like, no, what do I actually love making? What makes me happiest? And it's as boring and simple as it sounds, I just do try and stick to like being a nice person, being kind. And yeah, I don't know. I don't have much to offer in that space, except just, I don't know, treat everyone you work with the most kindness. And then it comes back to you.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like, you know, you said you haven't really done some brand strategy work, but you kind of have by, you know, trying to, you know, asking yourself those questions. That kind of is what brand strategy is figuring out, like, you know, what's important to me and what do I want to say and what do I want to come across as, like, that is that work. So you did it in essence, but not in like any structured kind of sense, but that's fine.
Yeah. I do remember actually when everything started, I had one friend who said, just keep asking yourself when you're going to start like a new project or something, does this align with your values and will you be proud of this in a few years to come? And I feel like I did continuously come back to those two questions, which is still really helpful.
Yeah. To this day. Yeah, those are great questions for sure. Props to that friend.
Yeah.
And then in terms of your like visual brand, have you, tell me about that at all. So have you done any work in terms of like fonts, colors, any of that stuff?
I do try and stick to a pretty like pastel tone palette all the time. I think I just like creating like a soft gentleness in my work, but I mean it's fun to play around with different colors as well. I haven't done a lot of work around fonts really. I feel like I sort of found my handwriting, just my general handwriting font seemed to, I don't know, people seem to respond to that, and I ended up using that in my books, and I've kind of probably maybe overused it now, but it feels like a sort of treasure that I try and hold on to in all my work. I I did something a while ago with Times New Roman or something, and I was like, oh, this feels, I love it in any other context, but in my own work, I was like, this is just not right, you know?
Yeah.
I love any hand lettering, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what makes your work unique, right? Like, I can spot your handwriting from a mile away, especially in combination with your illustration. Like, it screams Ruby. So I think it just is you, and it makes all your work feel like yours. So why change it if it works and it is so uniquely yours? So it makes sense, and no one else can write like you do, right? So if it works, it
Yeah, that's
works.
true.
That's
Yeah,
great.
absolutely.
Yeah, and so you mentioned that you use them in your books, and so you have launched and released two books. So tell me a little bit about the experience of getting to release books. It's so exciting. Obviously, I think the first one, All of This Is For You, came as a result of that initial illustration. Is that right?
Yeah, so I was contacted by a Penguin a month after that first drawing. Like, that was all just this kind of rapid succession of like things that don't happen. They were just like, hello, what could you do a book in like 6 weeks? And I was like,
Whoa.
yes, of course. So yeah, I still am like, I don't know how, where I pulled all those illustrations out from, but the concept for that was kind of just to make a book of reminders of how to hold on to that kindness that we were so good at showing in the immediate aftermath. And then that book kind of just took on a life of its own, like that first drawing. It just, like, I don't know, I'd be sent photos of it from all around the world, and
Yeah.
it's been translated, and it's just pretty magical. So that was 4 years ago now. And then my second book, In This Body, came out a year ago. And that one's just more about body image. It's a little bit bigger. It's slightly more like following, and whereas the other one's like standalone illustrations. But yeah, I think books is kind of what I really be full of, if that can be possible.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, they're the most fun project to work on, I think. And yeah, I've worked with an amazing team here, so
Yeah,
yeah.
incredible. Yeah, I think, I can imagine a lot of illustrators would have that as a dream to write or illustrate or release a book. Obviously, you kind of won the lottery of like somebody being like, "Hi, can you publish a book in 6 weeks?" That's incredible. So that's amazing. But do you have any sort of tips or insights about sort of the book publishing process or writing process or anything like that that you think would be interesting or that illustrators would like to know?
I think the first thing, books are incredible and being published is incredible, but I think there is this illusion that like it instantly means you're incredibly successful. And I would just say up front, there's like, to make money in books, you have to sell like a whole ton. So I think there is this sort of slight misconception there. That's just, I'm being grumpy on my first point. My second point, I think like it can be really fun if you have an idea for a book and maybe you're not the illustrator or you don't have the right words, and then finding someone whose work you love and just bringing a proposal together like that, and then sending that off to some publishers rather than, yeah, just sending in an idea on your own can be kind of fun. But I guess also as well, like, there's a lot of publishing houses here and overseas. I think people just think of the big ones a lot of the time. So I think it's so worth just having a Google and looking at how many there are. Even in New Zealand, there's a whole bunch. So, and like self-publishing as well, I think is such a great avenue to go down. A friend of mine, I think he self-published two or three books,
Wow.
and then he was published by Penguin here. And yeah, I don't know, I feel like that can also be a nice way to start out, you know, if you can afford it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
those are great tips. I think, yeah, like you said, it's such a big dream, but just having insights from somebody who's actually done it is really valuable. So that's amazing. And I think in terms of, like you said, the fact that you have to sell those books and obviously you have like a shop full of products and you're getting client work and stuff too. I'd love to talk to you about like social media and marketing in general. What has been your sort of social media strategy, or do you have a social media strategy in general? And then we can talk specifics, I guess, from there.
I don't Terrible. I don't really have a strategy at all. No, I just honestly, my only thing is that I do try and connect with as many people on there as possible. Mm-hmm. Like anytime someone takes a moment out of their day to send me any message, I always respond because I'm so aware of like, that's literally how I got my start. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I owe everything to every single person on there supporting me. So I just remember that. And I kind of like to, I think for a long time, I got into that awful headspace of being like, terrified of social media, you know, when you start to, the anxiety works up and you're like, oh, this, I have to post every 3 days and it has to be this good. And then I just sort of, I don't know, I just started remembering that like no one's sitting around waiting for you to post something.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I feel we put a weird amount of pressure on it sometimes. And while I love it, I think sometimes I can tell when I start to put more energy into working that side up, then that can take away from actually doing art and stuff. Some kind of, I don't know, I'm aware of like just finding an okay balance that works for me there.
Yeah,
so that's a long-winded answer that I don't really have a strategy.
No, I think that's a very like healthy approach to Instagram, especially like when you do have such a big audience. I feel like it could very very easily become like quite a big pressure. So to have that kind of self-awareness and to have the ability to separate that and be able to be like, yeah, no, like I want this to still be fun and to still be like a healthy relationship with my audience and stuff is really good. And so where are you posting on social? Are you focusing on just like one platform or are you everywhere? Or yeah, what are you doing in terms of that?
It is pretty much just Instagram at the moment. I have made a TikTok account, but I'm not sure how I feel about it yet.
Yeah.
I've made like 2 videos.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's a kind of a space I want to get into. My brother said I'm too old for it, but I don't know. I don't know. I really want to get into more just videos in general.
Yeah.
Not just because that's what the algorithm is demanding, but like animation and stuff. I'm so aware of like, there's so many doors I'm yet to even go through and look at. So yeah, at this stage, just Instagram. I do still have Twitter or X, but I'm not really on there now.
Yeah, fair enough. I think a lot of people are not really on there now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's cool that, you know, we can just focus on one platform and then explore as you feel interested or explore, like, yeah, intrigued by exploring rather than feel forced to because everyone else is or an algorithm is telling you you have to or whatever. Yeah, it's cool to just, and that's what I try and like teach people is like just do what you find interesting and what is the type of content you actually want to be making. Because if you try and force yourself to make video but you hate making video, then you're going to get burnt out on making videos, right? Like that's not going to be fun for you. And it's probably not going to have good results in the long run. But if you love making video and you're actually excited about that, then that's great. Or if, like you said, you're like, oh, what if I could animate some of my illustrations or I could like do some of this and that could be fun, then that's exciting and you should follow that curiosity, and that's cool. So that's exciting, and I'm interested to see how your TikToks go.
It is so that thing, the way of when you feel excited about making something that makes a world of difference, if it's just for the sake of like I have to be relevant or I have to be seen, then that, I don't know, that just becomes pretty tedious, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And that's like what creativity is about, right? Is like curiosity, following that intuition and that like ideation and like excitement of what if I tried this or what if I turned this idea into this or whatever, like that's what it should be.
Yeah.
And it is a little sad sometimes that we feel forced to try these things or forced to do these things rather than just following that creative spirit. So I applaud you for resisting. I love that.
Thank you.
Okay, so right now you have your books, you have your shop of products, you're doing work for clients, you're also like doing things like this. You just spoke at Semi-Permanent last week. You have a lot of things going on. So I would love to know, how do you sort of balance all of the parts of being an illustrator and building and growing a creative business? What is your sort of approach to balancing everything, if you have one?
I feel like I learned from that first year or two about burnout, and I'm so aware now of not going near that. Like, I love my work, I love what I do, I know how privileged I am, but that doesn't mean it's not still work. Like, I think lots of people can just kind of think we're sitting around with our feet up drawing little pictures, having tea all day, and it's kind of like half of it's like emails and tech stuff, and it's not, we're not always just drawing and painting and having a lovely time. But I think for me it is about learning to actually say no to some work. That I used to feel this sense of, oh, I better say yes to everything in case nothing comes along tomorrow, and now I just want to do the work that I love and that totally aligns with my values and what I care about. And I also have kind of learned to, I feel like I used to bend over backwards for people a bit. And now I've actually learned, oh no, I'm allowed to also negotiate due dates and stuff like that. So I'm just better at now being more assertive and spreading out my workload rather than, you know, working crazily till 2 a.m. for weeks on end. So yeah, I think it's just about recognizing when you need to stop and actually put yourself first. And I think as well as freelance, it's easy to, when you go to your regular office job and you have, never sick day or take a few days off and you leave, it's so easy to forget to do that as a freelancer. So I think actually recognizing I feel really awful today, I just need a day for me, you know. Just little things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I am still learning that same lesson. But we get better at those things over time, for sure. I was also reading some of your other like interviews and stuff that you had done. And I read in an interview that you had done with Smiling Mind that you had said that at the time, this is in 2022, that you had found yourself kind of overwhelmed with the state of the world. Obviously, there's still a lot kind of going on with the world right now. And we often, there's like lots of things going on in our personal worlds too. How do you sort of like keep creating, keep building your brand, keep being creative when there's so much going on and when maybe you do feel overwhelmed or there is a lot of things going on? How do you approach that?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think for me, I definitely do still clearly get overwhelmed by the state of the world, but I think I kind of let myself, I try not to get too overwhelmed with it. And in myself, I try and live every day remembering how grateful I am for everything I have, how lucky I am. And I think I've kind of worked out ways of like putting that into, even when I make a coffee in the morning, I don't say anything out loud or have a post-it note or anything, but in my head I'll just be like, I'm lucky that I can just press a button and I have a hot cup of coffee in my hands, or that I can turn the tap on and I have running water. So like, I just try and have those little moments through the day that remind me how lucky I am and how beautiful life is for me right now here, and like hold on to that for me and not try not to feel guilty about what else is happening around the world that I actually can't change at all. Because I think I used to kind of sit with that a lot and end up in like this ball of overwhelmed anxiety and stuff. And yeah, I think it's about recognizing what I can't change and then actually channeling that into work when it feels right as well. Like, I did feel the strange pressure for quite a long time to sort of comment on every big world event, and I kept getting messages from people saying, can you talk about this thing in this country and do a drawing for this thing. I remember thinking, oh my god, is that, am I meant to be doing that, you know? And then I realized I had just have to pull it back to that the first illustration was so genuine, it was so in the moment, and I was like, I can't force that. So I remind myself of that too. I don't ever try and force something out about a big idea or a big conversation. I just kind of let it come to me, you know. Even if it's like 2 a.m. and you have a thought, I'll just jot it down. But I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I love that idea of, like you said, like grounding yourself in gratitude and reminding yourself of the things you can't control so that you can channel your creativity in ways that you can control. I think that's like a really good balance and a nice way to like be able to not get too overwhelmed when things are overwhelming, whether that's in your personal life or in the world. It's helpful in both ways, so I think that's a great answer. And so to wrap things up, I have a couple of questions that I ask everybody. So my first question is, what do you think is the biggest lesson that you have learned about branding your passion?
I think, I don't want this to sound like a negative one, but I think I've learned that if you do work that appears like really soft and feminine and caring, people often think that you will happily work for free. Mm. And I feel like businesses often want to also use that to their advantage. So I guess I've just learned to be wary and to actually, yeah, I don't know, just remembering to hold on to what your work means to you and not letting people take you for a ride, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. That's a really interesting thing that I hadn't thought of, but like makes so much sense, but is annoying, like is so rubbish.
Totally.
Like I hate that.
Yeah, but, we're not
free. Yeah, but it makes so much sense, but I hate it. Yeah. Yeah, but I think that's definitely is a great lesson that you have learned and that we can pass on. And that is good that you have learned that now you can like stand strong, that even if people come with those expectations, you can be like, well, no, I might look that way, but actually, I will not.
No,
yeah, so that's great. Okay, and so if then you were to give some advice, doesn't have to be related to that question, but if you were to give some advice to other creatives who are thinking about branding their passion, what advice would you like to share with them?
Lame as it sounds, I think at the end of the day, remembering what the work is that makes you happiest and what you love making, because the minute you try and feed into what you think other people want or what the algorithm wants, I feel like you're just going to end up kind of miserable. And I feel like that can also come through in your work. If you're not loving it, people can tell that, you know?
Yeah, amazing. Well, thank you so, so much for sharing your story and your advice and your lessons with everybody. I have loved learning all of that about you, and I know that everybody listening is going to learn so much from your story and everything that you have shared. So thank you so much. Do you want to tell the people where they can find you and what you would love for them to go and check out?
Thank you so much. My handle is Ruby Ellis Rose, and my website, rubyellisrose.com. You can just go look at my little drawings there. You can say hi to me anytime. I don't have anything to promote right now. I'm wrapping up for the year, but thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for joining me. And I will put all the links to all those things. And you said you have nothing to promote, but you can go and check out the books. You can go and check out the shop, buy all the prints. I want to go get the teacup one.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we're going to go support Ruby in all of those ways.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Brand Your Passion and choosing to spend time with me learning all about branding, business, and all things creativity. You can find more episodes just like this one at makeitandmoxie.com/podcast. If you like this one, you can tap that subscribe or follow button so that you're notified about each and every new episode. And if you've got a spare second, please leave a review on iTunes or wherever it is that you're listening to this podcast, because I would absolutely 100% love to hear from you. If there were some helpful goodies in this episode for you, it would mean the world to me as well if you could screenshot that podcast player right now, hop on over to Instagram or Twitter, and tag us at Maker and Moxie. By subscribing, reviewing, and sharing, you're helping reach more creators just like you, so that together we can make the world a more creative place, one brand at a time. We can't achieve this mission without you, so your support means the absolute world. I will talk to you in the next episode, but until then, keep creating.